Formen genetimeren das ja. Janal Jalas Lakaya. Saksu Similitan Jainatas Mainstri Gidavena Maha. Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale. Sayam Nupakiramayam Dandati Sapadantikam. Once a copper to the star, people in the way of a child, the internum of an angel by sleep. We've just heard how Bali Maharaj had overtaken the kingdom of heaven. He had gained so much power from Sukracharya and the pleasure of the Brahminical descendants of Bhrigu Muni. His power increased so much there wasn't even a fight. Just see how blessings can help one achieve even something material, or to speak of it being required for spiritual advancement. Yasya prasada, Bhagavat prasada, Yasya prasada, Nagatiya katopi. So, as it is in this material world, all the demons were thrilled, they were ecstatic, they were happy, they were joyful that they had taken over the King of Heaven, the Kingdom of Heaven. Finally, it describes so many battles and they couldn't win. But here they won by superior blessings. So as it is in the material world, when one side is joyous, the other side is miserable. The very nature of material existence. Someone is laughing and someone is crying. And then in time it changes. The person who is crying becomes the laugher and the person who laughs becomes the crier. The very nature of the material world. So who was crying at this time? Of course the demigods were upset. And their mother, who was named Aditi, was really upset for her sons because they had been removed from heaven, from their rightful positions. So Aditi, we heard earlier in the seventh canto, third canto, and also at the end of the sixth canto, that Aditi's sister was named Diti, and both of them were married to Kasyapa Muni, the great Prajapati son of Marichi, one of the mental sons of Lord Brahma. Brahma produced them just from his mind. Actually, they not just produced from Brahma's mind, but they come out. They come out in every millennium, every day of Brahma, they come out and they enter into the Lord before that, at the time of destruction, then they come out again, produced by Brahma without the help of a wife or anything like that, mentally, just by the potency of his own mind, he produces Marichi. And one of Marichi's sons is Kasyapa Muni, who had many wives. Two of the wives were sisters, Diti and Aditi. From Diti, all the daityas, all the demons, took birth. We heard earlier in the third canto about how she approached Kasyapa Muni to have at an inappropriate time, and as a result, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were born. And later on, she had another plan. She wanted to kill Indra. And she approached Kasyapa for the methodology of doing that. So they were quite two sisters. So that was Diti who produced the daityas, or the demonic side. And here is Aditi. So previously, Diti was very upset because Indra was so powerful and her sons were minimized. And now it's Aditi's turn to be crying. Sukadeva Goswami said, this is chapter 16, text 1. O King, when Aditi's sons, the demigods, had thus disappeared from heaven, and the demons had occupied their places, Aditi began lamenting as if she had no protector. After many, many days, the great powerful sage Kasyapa Muni arose from trance of meditation and returned home to see the ashram of Aditi, neither jubilant nor festive, because she was lamenting, very upset. O best of the Kurus, when Kasyapa Muni had been properly received and welcomed by his wife, he took his seat and then spoke as follows to his wife Aditi, who was very morose. O most gentle one, he said to her, I wonder whether anything inauspicious has now taken place in regard to religious principles, the Brahmins or the people in general, who are subject to the whims of death. Has anything bad happened? He could immediately perceive that there was something improper within the atmosphere. Prabhupada's short purport. There are prescribed duties for all the inhabitants of this material world, especially for the Brahmanas, but also for the people in general, who are subject to the whims of death. Why is death? Isn't that interesting? The whims of death. Why? Why is that phrase interesting? Well, to me, it's interesting. Why is death considered whimsical? It seems like it sometimes. It's someone who everything is going, he's doing all the right things, keeping his health, this, that, successful, and suddenly, boom, finish. Whimsical. Suddenly a child may die. Suddenly the child may die and the old man may be saved. Whimsical. It's actually not whimsical because these things are enacted by karma, but for externally one can accuse death of being whimsical because there's no rhyme and reason. Who lives, who dies? He who seems like he should die, someone who's horrible, think, how is this person left alive? He's done so many sinful things and he lives to be 200, 300 years old or something. And then someone else who is so pious and good, saintly, dies at a young age. How old was Sankaracharya when he died? 24 or something? Well, very, very young. Maybe a little more.
32.
So young. And then so many nasty old men lived to be so many years. So, whims of death. Kasyapa Muni wondered whether the regulative principles which are meant for the well-being of everyone had been disobeyed, because he noticed there was an inauspiciousness in the atmosphere. He accordingly continued his inquiries for 7 verses. Oh, my wife. So he's trying to understand what is the cause of this, what is the cause of this in the atmosphere? Oh, my wife, who are very much attached to household life, if the principles of religion, economic development, and satisfaction of the senses are properly followed in household life, one's activities are as good as those of a transcendentalist. I wonder whether there had been any discrepancies in following these principles. Something has caused this. What are the discrepancies? Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, Aditi has been addressed by her husband Kasyapa Muni as Griha Maidini, which means one who is satisfied in household life for sense gratification. Generally, those who are in household life pursue sense gratification in the field of activities performed for material results. Such Grihamedis have only one aim in life, sense gratification. And this practically is a criticism of everyone in this world. Only aim of life, sense gratification, the purpose of marriage, family life, is to just enjoy, prolong it as long as possible, as if one can live forever by performing these activities. Therefore, Prabhupada continues, it is said, Yan maitunadi griham medi sukham hitucham. The household of life is based on sense gratification, and therefore the happiness derived from it is tucham. Very, very meager, small, insignificant, because according to one's activities, according to the type of activity one performs, one will get one type of reward or happiness derived from that activity. So household of life as a source of happiness gives awards meager happiness, actually. Because it is based on sense enjoyment. And the senses have a very small capacity to... It is the grossest type of happiness. Not real happiness. And it ultimately, because it is based on passion, it ultimately causes distress. Nonetheless, the Vedic process is so comprehensive that even in household life, one can adjust his activities according to the regulative principles of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. One's aim should be to achieve liberation. But because one cannot at once give up sense gratification, in the Shastras there are injunctions prescribing how to follow the principles of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. As explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharmasya Yapavagasya Narto Artupakalpate. Prabhupada was once asked which his favorite verse of the Bhagavatam, which was the most important verse of the Bhagavatam. And at that time he replied this verse from the second chapter of the first canto. Dharmasya Yapavagasya Narto Artupakalpate. That the purpose of Dharma, religion, is not sense enjoyment. But yet, there are methodologies prescribed in the Vedas that regulate one's sense enjoyment, that one, even in household life, will be able to become purified and gain the advantage, the more eternal or more eternal benefits of life, which means spiritual benefits. So the Vedic system is very broad. It included everyone. And the basic principle was that everyone, regardless of one's position, regardless of one's desires, at least everyone should move forward in spiritual life. No one should move backwards. Even if one can't progress greatly, still one should move forward at least something. So if one, even if one has great intense desires to enjoy, if one tries to enjoy using the Vedic system, then one will move forward spiritually, even though he will get his sense enjoyment and he will nevertheless move forward spiritually. This is the virtue of the Vedic path, the Vedic system. But that type of enjoyment that one gets through following the Vedas, it is not the goal of the Vedas. The goal of the Vedas and the Vedic system, Vedas Chasava, Hameva Vidyo, it is Krishna, service to Krishna. So one's aim should be to achieve liberation. But because one cannot at once give up sense gratification, in the Shastras there are injunctions prescribing how to follow the principles of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. As explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharmasya Yapivagasya Narta Artupakalpate. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Those who are in household life should not think that religion is meant to improve the process of the household of sense gratification. Household life is also meant for advancement in spiritual understanding, by which one can ultimately gain liberation from the material clutches. That's another nice expression, clutches of matter. Very hard to get free from the clutches of matter. It's even hard to want to get free from it, because the nature of maya, or illusion, is that we become attached to being clutched or caught by the causes of our own misery. That's the nature of illusion. The very thing that causes us misery we become attached to. The clutches of sense gratification. One should remain in household life with the aim of understanding the ultimate goal of life, tattva jigyasa. Then household life is as good as the life of a yogi. So there's grihamedi and grihastha. Grihastha is ashram, Prabhupada once told me. Grihastha is also an ashram, meaning that it is meant for spiritual advancement. It is not meant for material accumulations of different varieties. It is meant for spiritual advancement. And it is very hard to keep this within one's consciousness for most people, because the very nature of householder life is that it tends to entangle one in material life, because material life expands in household life. It tends to expand greatly, because a brahmachari can live very simply. And then as soon as can live with some other brahmacharis, for example. But then as soon as there is marriage, then a separate house is needed. And then instead of having to take care of one mind, one has to take care of more than one, and there's two. And then after two, there's three, then four, then five, and onward like that. And they're all saying, me, 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 I want this, I need this, I need this. And expanding, 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 expanding. And then it geometrically progresses when there are grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-great-grandchildren, and there's hordes of people all demanding. And then when you can't satisfy their demands, I say, what is this person? He's useless. You can't even give me what I want. As if the purpose of your existence is to fulfill their desires and needs. But this is the tendency to be unsatisfied, to never have enough. No matter what one has, one never has enough. This is the tendency. So therefore, one has to fight this tendency. And there are methodologies for this. Chanting Hare Krishna, following rules and regulations, giving one's hard-earned wealth in Krishna's service, worshipping the deity, serving the Vaishnavas, distributing prasadam, especially what is required in household life is giving in charity of the four different ashrams. Brahmachari life is meant for study. Specifically, it is meant for study. Grihastha life is meant for charity. Vanaprastha life is meant for austerity. And sannyas is meant for preaching. These are the jewels within each of the different ashram situations. So if one prosecutes his household life properly with Krishna in the center, then Prabhupada says, then household life is as good as the life of a yogi. Because it is ashram, then grihastha ashram. One will spiritually advance. This is due to the potency of Krishna consciousness. Kasyapa Muni therefore inquired from his wife whether the principles of religion, economic development, and sense gratification were being properly followed in terms of the Shastric injunctions. As soon as one deviates from the injunctions of the Shastra, the purpose of household life is immediately lost in confusion. So he continued asking, what is the problem? I wonder whether because of being too attached to the members of your family, you failed to properly receive uninvited guests, who therefore were not welcome and went away. Homes from which guests go away without having been received, even with an offering of a little water, are like those holes in the field which are the homes of jackals. Condemnation of not treating an atithi or an uninvited guest, someone who happens to come by, properly. At least, the verse says, some water should be offered. Prabhupada's purport to these two verses. It is the duty of householders to receive guests, and even if a guest be an enemy, even if a guest be an enemy. When a guest comes to one's home, one should properly receive him by standing up and offering him a seat. Nowadays, when a guest comes to one's home, one has to stand up to look through the peephole to see who it is, and check the video cameras to make sure who it is. But even if an enemy comes to one home, just imagine if a thief comes to your home, you say, oh, please sit down, have something to eat, we'll take care of you. What do you want? You've come to my house, what do you want? I want everything. No, please, you have come, thank you, take everything. Even if an enemy comes to one's home, one should receive him in such a way that the guest will forget that his host is an enemy. According to one's position, One should properly receive anyone who comes to one's home. There's actually a story in the Ramanuja Sampradaya how Ramanuja Acharya was giving great respect to one of his disciples who was a householder. And he had many, many brahmachari disciples too. And they were wondering, why is he giving them so much respect, the householders so much respect? And the brahmacharis were upset with the householders. You know the story. And then Ramanujacharya wanted to tell them. He wanted to give them an example. And he did, I can't remember what it was. The first thing he did is they were brahmacharis. They had very, very few possessions. They just had some cloth, simple cloth. So the first thing he did is he switched around the cloth and ripped some of it or something like that. He had that done. And when the brahmacharis saw that their cloth, the little pieces of cloth were ripped, they were so upset and they started fighting with each other and being angry at each other. They were so angry. And then, later on, he said, the temple needs some money. And you know, this householder disciple that I have, they have gold. I want you to go in the middle of the night and steal it from them. In the middle of the night, this Mataji who has gold, she wears so much gold, you go and steal it from them. So in the middle of the night, some of the brahmacharis went, and the Mataji saw that they were there, but she didn't let them know because they were sleeping. She saw that they were there, and she saw that, and she was sleeping like this or something, and she had golden bangles on. She was sleeping like this in the bed. So she thought, oh, the disciples of Guru Maharaj, Ramanujacharya, have come. They're trying to take the bangles off my hand. They must need it for their Guru Maharaj, for our Guru, Ramanujacharya. So let me make it easier for them. So she made believe in her sleep that she stretched. And then she went like this so they could easily take off the bangles. And then they became frightened. And she was trying to turn over in her sleep so that they could get the bangles off the other hand too. And then they went running out or something, and then Ramanujacharya confronted them and said, Remember how you were fighting when your little pieces of cloth were taken? Now find out why she was yawning and turning over. You'll see that she was completely detached from her wealth. So this is why he was explaining. This is why I give him so much respect and affection, because truly they are detached. Truly they are detached. I think it actually in the middle of the night when they woke up or something. I think what happened was the husband saw that she had all the bangles, half her hand, one of her hands was bereft of the bangles. So he said, "Why? What happened? That you lost half the bangles on one of your hands?" And she replied, "Well, the disciples of Guru Maharaj came and they took those bangles, so I made it easy for them." And then her husband said, "You fool! Why didn't you yawn?" But they couldn't get the ones on the other hand. He said, "Why didn't you turn over and let them take the ones on those ends?" Something like that. So very wonderful. It's actually possible to be fully detached if one is fully attached to Krishna. Otherwise one will always hold on to something or another. So when one actually has Krishna, one has that wealth, then nothing in the material world has any value, appears to be valuable. Like the famous story of Sanatana Goswami when he had that touchstone, keeping it in the garbage. Keeping it in the garbage. You could turn anything into gold, It was valueless for him, keeping it in the garbage. That is the glory of actually having Krishna. Nothing else is valuable. So it is enjoined. So one of the principles of household life is, because that tendency is to be selfish and never think one has enough. So the injunction is to become generous. So at least when even if an enemy comes to one's home, one should receive him in such a way that the guest will forget that his host is an enemy. According to one's position, one should properly receive anyone who comes to one's home. At least a seed and a glass of water should be offered, so that the guest will not be displeased. Kasyapa Muni inquired from Aditi whether disrespect had been shown to such guests or Atiti. The word Atiti refers to one who comes without an invitation. And the second of those verses. In a field, so a person, a household which doesn't properly receive guests compared to the hole of in which a jackal lives. In the field there may be many holes made by snakes and mice. But when there are very big holes, it may be supposed that jackals live there. Certainly no one goes to take shelter in such homes. Thus the homes of human beings where atithis, uninvited guests, are not properly received, are like the homes of jackals. Text 8. O chaste and auspicious woman, when I left home for other places, were you in so much anxiety that you did not offer oblations of ghee into the fire? By worshipping the fire and the Brahmins, a householder can achieve the desired goal of residing in the higher planets. For the sacrificial fire and the Brahmanas are to be considered the mouths of Lord Vishnu, who is the supersoul of all the demigods. O great-minded lady, are all your sons faring well? Seeing your withered face, I can perceive that your mind is not tranquil. How is this so? Text 11. Aditi began her reply. O my respected Brahmana husband, all is well with the Brahmanas, the cows, religion, and the welfare of other people. O master of the house, the three principles of Dharma, Artha, and Kam flourish in household life, which is consequently full of good fortune. O beloved husband, the fires, guests, servants, and beggars are all being properly cared for by me. Because I always think of you, there is no possibility that any of the religious principles will be neglected. O my Lord, since you are a Prajapati and are personally my instructor in the principles of religion, where is the possibility that all my desires will not be fulfilled? So, at the present, when she's saying this, she's being very indirect and clever. She's looking very miserable, and she's saying, yes, I'm doing everything right. All my desires are being fulfilled because you are my husband. So she's saying, you are my husband, and now I'm basically going to tell you what my problem is, and you have to tell me how to fulfill that desire. O son of Marichi, because you are a great personality, you are equal toward all the demons and demigods. Now she's going to come out with what her desire is, because both the demons and the demigods come from him. He is the father of both. Diti and Aditi are both his wives. You are a great personality, or equal towards all demons and demigods who are born either from your body or from your mind, and who possess one or another of the three qualities, sattva-gun, rajagun, or tamagun. But although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, is equal to all living entities, he is especially favorable to the devotees. Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Name Dvesho Stina Priya. Samoham, I am equal to all. Sarvabhuteshu, all living entities. Name Dvesho Astina Priya. There's no one who I'm envious of, and there's no one who's especially dear to me. This is the nature of the Paramatma, or the Super Soul, Samaham Savabhuteshu. He's in everyone's heart. Ye bhujanti tumam bhaktya. And this is the nature of Bhagawan. But ye bhajanti, one who worships me, my with bhakti, maye tateshu chapyaham. I especially live in that person, and that person especially lives in me. So Prabhupada's purport continues. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is equal towards everyone, he is especially inclined toward those who engage in his devotional service. The Lord says, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashiti. My dear son of Kunti, please declare that my devotee will never be vanquished. So Krishna is equal to everyone, kind to everyone, but he's especially kind to his devotees. Krishna also says, Yeyatam mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyam mamavart manavartante manushapattasavasa. Actually, everyone is trying to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead in various ways. But according to their methods of approach, the Supreme Lord endows them with different benedictions. They're either trying to please Krishna directly or please one of his energies. But everyone is on the path towards pleasing Krishna. It's unavoidable. It's unavoidable. Because there is nothing separate from Krishna. And anything that one would try to please or try to obtain is just an aspect of his energy. So, according to one's method of worship, method of approach, the Supreme Lord endows them with different benedictions. Thus, Aditi appealed to her husband by saying that since even the Supreme Controller favors his devotees, and since Indra, Kasyapa's devoted son, was in difficulty, Kasyapa should bestow his favor upon Indra. So both the sons, the demons, the devotees, you're equal to them. But yet, the devotees, that's Indra's side, that's my son, you should be especially favorable towards. Therefore, most gentle Lord, kindly favor your maidservant. We have now been deprived of our opulence and residence by our competitors, the demons. Kindly give us protection. The demons, our formidably powerful enemy, have taken away our opulence, our beauty, our fame, and even our residence. Indeed, we have now been exiled, and we are drowning in an ocean of trouble. O best of sages, best of those who grant auspicious benedictions, please consider our situation and bestow upon my sons the benedictions by which they can regain what they have lost. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when Kasyapa Muni was thus requested by Aditi, he slightly smiled. Alas, he said, how powerful is the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu by which the entire world is bound by affection for children. Purport. Kasyapa Muni was certainly sympathetic to his wife's affliction, yet he was surprised at how the whole world is influenced by affection. Affection to one's family members. And if one looks at the relationship between the members of the family from the point of view of eternity, there actually is no relationship. There's souls, everyone, there's a soul living within the body, and the body is produced, is related to another body, but the soul has nothing to do with that body. And in the eternal scheme of things, the relationship is nothing. Like when Chitraketu's son had died, the soul had left the body, and then by the potency of Narada Muni, he was brought back into the body, and Narada said, you have left untimely, you have died untimely, so you can come back and you can see how your parents, they're lamenting, they're so disturbed, they're crying and crying due to their affection for you. Because you have died, now you, O soul, can re-enter the body and end the lamentation of your mother and father. And that soul realized, who was realized on the spiritual platform, understanding himself as a soul, there was no influence of the modes of material nature. His consciousness wasn't covered. His mind wasn't grasping for matter. Therefore, he was realized of his spiritual nature. He replied, "Which ones are my mother and father? I've had so many mothers and fathers. I've had in every species of life we have mothers and fathers. We have a mother bird from whose egg we are hatched. There's so many species of life. We've lived in dog wombs, cat wombs, fish wombs. No, fish. Alan, you're the expert on fish. Do fish have wombs?" Yes, yes. There we go. That's the answer. So we've had so many parents. So many kinds of brothers and sisters. So it's the identification with the body, which is illusory, that makes us identify with the sources of the body and those who also have a relationship with the same body that we have a relationship with. So Kasyapa Muni is amazed how powerful this identification is. And somewhere in the Bhagavatam it even described how even great sages have a difficult time giving up the identification with one's country and caste, etc., like that, all based on the body. So how powerful the illusory energy is. It's unbreakable. Daiviyesha gunamayi mama maya diratyaya. Because it's empowered by Krishna, no one can break the grip of this illusory energy other than Krishna. Only Krishna actually can get us out. Otherwise, it's so deep. Kasyapa Muni, after making this exclamation, he said, "What is this material body made of five elements? It is different from the spirit soul. Indeed, the spirit soul is completely different from the material elements from which the body is made. But because of bodily attachment, one is regarded as a husband or son. These illusory relationships are caused by misunderstanding." Misunderstanding what? Misunderstanding who we are. Here is Prabhupada's purport. "The spirit soul, Atma or Jiva, is certainly different from the body, which is a combination of five material elements. This is a simple fact. But it is not understood unless one is spiritually educated. Kasyapa Muni met his wife, Aditi, in the heavenly planets, but the same misconception extends throughout the entire universe and is also here on earth. There are different grades of living entities, but all of them are more or less under the impression of the bodily conception of life. In other words, all living entities in this material world are more or less devoid of spiritual education. Very unfortunate, because if we identify with the body, we are going to die. Imperceptibly, the body becomes older, and although we don't become older, and everyone perceives themselves as the same age as they were when they were younger, but yet the body becomes older and they are forced to experience death due to the identification of the body, and old age, and disease, and so many pains. So all living entities in the material world, more or less, are more or less devoid of spiritual education. This is the ABCs of spiritual education. The Vedic civilization, however, is based on spiritual education, and spiritual education is the special basis on which Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna instructed Arjuna to understand that the spirit soul is different from the body. This is the most basic education. Dehinosmin yata dehe komanam lovanam dura tata dehantara praptiya diras tatranamuyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Unfortunately, this spiritual education is completely absent from modern human civilization. No one understands his real interest, which lies with the spirit soul, not with the material body. Education means spiritual education. To work hard in the bodily conception of life without spiritual education is to live like an animal. This is the basic preaching. Nayam deho deha bhajan viloke kastan kamanahati vidbujam ye. People are working so hard simply for bodily comforts without education regarding the spirit soul. Thus they are living in a very risky civilization. Why risky? Because we'll lose the opportunity of human life and next life. Instead of going to the spiritual world with awakened spiritual consciousness, due to our illusion, we can take birth as a dog or a cat. And Prabhupada would mock this. And people would say, so what if I become a dog? So what if I become a cat? Practically, people are living dog-like and cat-like existences even now, despite their human bodies. Prabhupada would say, what's the difference? A dog is running on four legs, and men are running on their four wheels. But the running is the same. Running after eating, running after sleeping, running after mating, running after defending, running to make money, running on this material platform, running, running, running. Basically like an animal. And then he would say that if you put all these animals together, selfish and running after sense gratification, how do you expect peace in the world? If you put dogs, 50, 100 dogs in a room, the room may be called the United Nations, but if they're all in the room because they have animal consciousness, what is the hope of there actually being peace? Especially if you have all the dogs and you've trained them to sit, but then you just throw one bone in and they go mad. And that's what happens. So it is a very risky civilization. For it is a fact that the spirit soul has to migrate from one body to another. Without spiritual education, people are kept in dark ignorance and do not know what will happen to them after the annihilation of the present body. So people will say, what's the harm if I become a dog? I won't know that I was previously such and such a person, and this is a step down. And anyway, I can run around on the street and enjoy as much as I like. No restrictions for a dog. So how wonderful. So this is contemporary civilization, that people prefer dog bodies to human bodies because of unrestricted sex life, basically. So Prabhupada condemned this so strongly. And compare the next life being a dog's life to the next life being an eternal associate of Krishna. For Prabhupada, that was real. That possibility, that reality was reality. That was real. So therefore he could so strongly condemn these materialistic civilizations which have no spiritual education. Animals, he would call them. Very strong in his condemnation, relentlessly strong. They're working, people are kept in dark ignorance and do not know what will happen to them after the annihilation of the present body. They're working blindly, and blind leaders are directing them. Andarya tandarya paniyamanas te pisha tatram urudam nibadha. A foolish person does not know that he's completely under the bondage of material nature. And that after death, material nature will impose upon him a certain type of body which he will have to accept. How much suffering? There's so much suffering attached to it. Because ignorance causes suffering. And so much ignorance is there. goodness causes happiness, and there is an absence of goodness in animal bodies. So much suffering, the very existence means suffering. And people aren't afraid of this. They'll have to accept these bodies if they live animal-like lives. He does not know that although in his present body he may be an important, very important man, he may next get the body of an animal or a tree because of his ignorant activities in the modes of material nature. Therefore, the Krishna conscious movement is trying to give the true light of spiritual existence to all living entities. This movement is not very difficult to understand, and people must take advantage of it, for it will save them from the risky life of irresponsibility. This was the basic preaching. This is the basic preaching. That human beings should use their life responsibly. Responsible use of human life. Not irresponsible use of human life and using it to be sophisticated animals. Sophisticated animals. Using the intelligence that human life affords to just become proficient in the animal activities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Very strongly condemned as irresponsible. So, Kasyapa Muni was talking about this illusion, and then he said, "My dear Aditi, engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You want the best thing for your sons. Engage in devotional service to the Lord. Bhagavantam Janardhanam. To Bhagawan, to Janardhan. You engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master of everything, who can subdue everyone's enemies, and who sits within everyone's heart. Only that Supreme Person, Krishna or Vasudev, can bestow all auspicious benedictions upon everyone, for he is the spiritual master of the universe. Only he can help you." This is what Dhruva Maharaj's mother told Dhruva. The Lord can help you. You want a kingdom? He can help you. This is what Kasyapa Muni previously told Diti, Aditi's sister, when he wanted to kill Indra. He gave her a methodology of worship of the Supreme Personality of God, and that purified her. And all good came from it, even though her motives were very, very bad to kill Indra. Good came from it. Because she was worshipping the Supreme Lord. So therefore, second canto, Bhagavatam, says, Akama sava kamava moksha kama udaradhi. Worship the Supreme Lord regardless of what your situation is. Whether you have desires, have no desires, have the desires for liberation. Worship the Lord with devotion. And, as this verse Kasyapa Muni says, only he is the real giver of benedictions. We may get them through someone else, seemingly, but ultimately they're coming from him. No one else has power in this world. Everyone else is insignificant. So go right to the source, Krishna, and worship him. Prabhupada's purport. With these words, Kasyapa Muni tried to pacify his wife. Aditi made her appeal to her material husband. "Of course, that is nice, but actually a material relative cannot do anything good for anyone. If anything good can be done, it is done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. Therefore, Kasyapa Muni advised his wife Aditi to begin worshipping Lord Vasudev, who is situated in everyone's heart. He is the friend of everyone and is known as Janardana because he can kill all one's enemies. There are three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And above material nature, transcendental to material nature, is another existence, which is called Shuddha Sattva. In the material world, the mode of goodness is considered the best. But because of material contamination, even the mode of goodness is sometimes overpowered by the modes of passion and ignorance. But when one transcends the competition between these modes and engages himself in devotional service, he rises above the three modes of material nature. In that transcendental position, one is situated in pure consciousness, Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Sabditam. Above material nature is the position called Vasudeva, or freedom from material contamination. Only in that position can one perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. So this is the problem, why it's so hard for us to perceive God, perceive that we're souls. Why? Because we're covered, we're under the cloud of goodness, passion, and ignorance, especially passion, ignorance. And therefore we can't perceive anything. Ignorance is compared to darkness. And in darkness, what can we see? Only by light we can see. And light is compared to knowledge or goodness. So therefore, to actually perceive the Lord, we have to go above the modes of material nature, above even goodness, to the platform of Vasudeva, the Sudasattva, pure goodness platform. And then on that platform, when one's consciousness is clear, crystal clear, devoid of the modes of material nature, and it's possible, because it's just the mind that is attached to so many things. But when these attachments are broken through purity, then the consciousness becomes crystal clear, and one can perceive spiritually, naturally, who one is. And then, in that consciousness, by the grace of Krishna, one can perceive even Him. But it can't be done without pure consciousness. And that's what we tend to want, to have our cake and eat it too, so to speak. We want to have all the material. Let me speak for myself. I can't speak for other nice devotees. But tend to want the material enjoyments and want Krishna too. But it doesn't work that way. Can't have both. Can't be pouring water on the fire and expect it to be blazing at the same time. One has to have it, for it to blaze, one has to be saturated with spiritual consciousness, not the modes of material nature. Thus the Vasudeva condition fulfills a spiritual necessity. Vasudeva Savamiti Samahatma Sadolabha. When one reaches Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes most exalted. Sadolabha though, Samahatma. He is very rare, such a soul. Paramatma Vasudeva is situated in everyone's heart. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Tesham Satatayuktaram Bhajatam Pratipurvakam Dadami Buddhiyogam Tam Yenamam Upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted and who worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Ishwara Savabhutanam Vidishe Arjuna Tishtati. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna. Bhoktaram jagatapasam savalokamaheshanam sridam savabhutanam gyatvamam shantimichati. The sage is knowing me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. Whenever one is perplexed, let him take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudeva, Krishna, who will give the devotee intelligence to help him surpass all difficulties and return home back to Godhead. That is nice. Put that upon on the wall. So we remember this. Whenever one is perplexed, let him take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudeva Krishna, who will give the devotee intelligence to help him surpass all difficulties and return back to home, back to Godhead. Kasyapa Muni advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudeva Krishna so that all her problems would be very easily solved. Thus, Kasyapa Muni was an ideal spiritual master. He was not so foolish that he would present himself as an exalted personality as good as God. He was actually a bona fide guru because he advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudeva. One who trains his subordinate or disciple to worship Vasudeva is the truly bona fide spiritual master. And the final verse we'll read today. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kasyapa Muni continued, who is very merciful to the poor, will fulfill all of your desires. For devotional service unto him is infallible. Any method other than devotional service is useless. That is my opinion. encouraging her to strongly take shelter of the Lord in devotional service. And starting the second paragraph of the purport, we'll read to the end. Kasyapa Muni saw that his wife, Aditi, had some material desires for the welfare of her sons. But still he advised her to render devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, everyone, regardless of whether one is a Karmi, a Jnani, Yogi, or Bhakta, should invariably take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudeva and render transcendental loving service unto him, so that all his desires will be duly fulfilled. Krishna is Dina Anukampana. He is very merciful to everyone. Therefore, if one wants to fulfill his material desires, Krishna helps him. Of course, sometimes if a devotee is very sincere, the Lord is a special favor to him, refuses to fulfill his material desires, and directly blesses him with pure, unalloyed devotional service. It is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna kahe ama bhaje mage vishyasuka amrita chadi visya mage e bhara murka ami vigya e murki visya kene diva swacharanamrita diya vishaya bulaiva. Krishna says, if one engages in my transcendental loving service but at the same time wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he is very, very foolish. Indeed, he's just like a person who gives up ambrosia, nectar, to drink poison. But since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. So this is Krishna's mercy when he takes everything away. Adishya tadaram sunai. He does that only to the devotees he's very specially fond of, because of their sincerity. If a devotee maintains some material desire and at the same time very sincerely desires to engage at the lotus feet of Krishna, Krishna may directly give him unalloyed devotional service and take away all his material desires and possessions. This is the Lord's special favor to devotees. Otherwise, if one takes to Krishna's devotional service but still has material desires to fulfill, he may become free from all material desires as Dhruva Maharaj did, but this may take some time. However, if a very sincere devotee wants only Krishna's lotus feet, Krishna directly gives him the position of Shuddha Bhakti, unalloyed devotional service. So which do we want? The slow path or the quick path? Sometimes it's easier to say the quick path. Yes, Krishna, take away everything. I only want your lotus feet. There's once the famous story of how Saint Augustine, the Christian saint, when he first became a Christian, he had a girlfriend. And he prayed, "Oh, please God, take everything from me so I may only have you, but not yet." So we may be a little like that. Take everything, I only want you, but after some time, badme. When I'm old, when I have that. Yes. Krishna, let's see how he deals. When I'm too old and I can't enjoy anymore, then you can take everything. After I've lost everything, then you can take everything and I have only you. So, of course, this is not very wise to think like that. And Krishna sometimes says, "All right, you can have your material life if that's what you want, and gradually you'll come to me." Or sometimes he may give us a slap instead and say, "No, you rascal, I'll take everything now and I'll force you to come to me." Prabhupada said that Krishna wouldn't allow his material businesses to be successful. He kept taking everything from him. And then as soon as Prabhupada took sannyas, very soon after that, He was gored by a bull. And he thought, what is this? I've given up everything. I've taken sannyasa. And this happens? And then Prabhupada struggled for so long with no external success. But Krishna had his plan. Took everything from him. Wouldn't allow him success. And then look what he did. Look what he gave him. Due to Prabhupada's incredible sincerity. So sincere, so fully engaged, wanting nothing other than spreading the glories of Mahaprabhu and Krishna. Let the world know that it is Krishna who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though there are so many religions, he said, but what do they know who about God? They don't know who God is. They don't know anything about Him. And therefore, how can they really give up material life? Unless one knows about Krishna, about Goloka Vrindavan, how can one give up material life? One can say, oh yes, God is everything is God or something like that. But then one will become very expert at subtly or grossly enjoying material life. Because what's the alternative? When you think the truth is nothing, then nothing is the alternative. And you'll into matter and you enjoy matter. But if one catches a glimpse of fragrance of Goloka Vrindavan, then everything is different. When one really wants that, when that spark can enter that heart, and then if that flames and blazes, it will burn up every other desire. So, do we want Krishna now? Do we pray? Take everything from me and give me your lotus feet. That we have to answer ourselves. Okay, welcome here. Next week, Krishna willing, we'll continue with classes in the evening, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.